Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, as promised weeks ago, I am catching up with yet another of the amazing musicians I was fortunate enough not only to hear, but to record at the 11th Newport Jazz Party at the Marriott in Newport, California last year. If you've been listening at all, you know I played the first three right after, and then with a long break, I played Eric Scott Reed, a wonderful piano player, not that long ago, and today, another amazing pianist. This is Benny Green. Benny is not only an amazing pianist, he's a very thoughtful and philosophical young man who has a lot to say about not only the music of jazz, the music itself, but what it means, what it says to us, what we can learn from it. So he's got a lot to say, and I'm going to play at least two cuts from his CD Source. So it's something. Hang on, here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from no.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about recognizing when you are really who you are. Not trying to be somebody that somebody else wants you to be. Not trying to be somebody that you think you're supposed to be. Not trying to be somebody you think people are supposed to be. But the real you, taking the risk, and it is quite often a risk, that others will not, like love, want to hang around. But that price is worth paying, because pretending is so hard, and in the end it just feels so bad. So, that's what this show is about, and in every show I talk, as long as I have time to talk, about what exactly that means, what you might be able to do about it. But in this show, I'm not going to say very much about it because I don't have much time. However, you can go up on my website, thelynshow.com, thelynshow, don't leave the E out of Lynn, and click on any podcast to hear what I have to say about finding and becoming yourself. In this show, I'm playing an interview with a remarkable pianist. And actually, that's how I start this interview. I start this interview by saying, and here I am with Benny Green, a remarkable pianist. And he absolutely is. At the very beginning of the interview, I want to tell you this kind of a clang. It's because we were doing this interview in a storage room, and I put the tape recorder down on something that made noise. So, Benny has just come off the stage when I do this interview with him, and he has so much to say about the importance of jazz, of the music, as opposed to what a lot of people think of as jazz. What passes for jazz. This is the pure thing. And the interview is long, and I want to play two cuts, at least two, mostly two cuts, from his CD called Source. And I'm going to play the first one now. It's called Tempus Fugit, and you'll know why it's called Tempus Fugit when you hear it. And I'm playing it now because I start off this interview by talking about his intensity as a performer. And you can hear it. It's extraordinary in this piece. So I'm going to play Tempus Fugit and then my interview with Benny Green. Here with Benny Green, who is just a remarkable pianist, just remarkable. And I'm here at the 11th Newport Beach Jazz Party, right? Have you played here before?
I have a few times. It's wonderful to be here. There's so much love among the musicians.
You know, when you say there's so much love among the musicians, that is clearly true. But not everyone is the recipient of the same amount of love. And it's glaringly apparent that everybody loves you. They shine when you come on stage.
They are
so glad to see you and to have you play with them.
Thank you.
No, I feel, yeah, well, this is a, you know, just observed, right? from outside. It's so clear.
Thank you. Oh, so wonderful to hear.
Well, it's absolutely the truth. And of course, when you play, I understand a lot about why that is. But the other reason I wanted to talk to you was something I see in you that's kind of an interesting dichotomy that I don't see a lot. And that is, and you have to correct me if I'm wrong about this, because I don't know, but it seems to me that you are a very, very gentle person and a very, very intense musician. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yes. It's an interesting, I want to say the word again, dichotomy. You know that you sit down at the piano, it's like somebody else is playing. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, did you set out to, is it intentional? Did it just happen? Were you aware of it? Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I think I understand what you're asking me. I have some sort of a conscience, and it's of great importance to me not to be violent or hurtful to people. And I certainly can't say, as I've had a perfect record, but I can say that I try, and I've consistently tried throughout my life. And when I'm playing, there's a sense of honor, of purpose, of responsibility, of respect, of care.
To the music? Or to the world?
The music that's been put forth already, that we listen to on records, that we've heard in the past, it's alive in us. And it lives in us when we reflect on it and think about it, when we listen to a recording. And I think from very early on, hearing jazz records at home, my father was listening to a Thelonious Monk album called Monk's Dream quite often, Charlie Parker and Ray Charles. We got a piano, and I noticed that I could find some notes on the piano that seemed to my virgin ears to sort of match up with what I was hearing on the record, and that the sound of our instrument seemed to sort of match up with the sound of the instrument that Thelonious Monk was playing on the recording. Pretty much from then on, there's something that I really wish to convey, and in a sense to channel. And for some reason, life has led me to band leader, teacher, mentors that have all exuded a lot of fire and really had an agenda that the audience receives a really uplifting and meaningful experience from the music, which is really representative of like the essence of what this music actually is, jazz music, that was founded by people who developed it to such a profound depth of expression that people all over the world that didn't even want to acknowledge this race of people, you know, had to concede, wow, this is some great music. Will you please come to our country and play for us? Mm-hmm. So it's a victorious music. And I've learned through my teachers and mentors and musical parents, discernment, a sense of knowing, a sense of value in the music, playing jazz, what's most important, and who to defer to on the bandstand. There's always one person on the bandstand that has the best time. If you're truly about the music and you're selfless, you know who that person is. The only thing that would stand in the way of not knowing would be ignorance or an ego. So, yeah, that experience teaches us to like zoom right in on who has the strongest time on the bandstand, whatever the age, whatever the instrument. And so for me, I know that not every young musician coming along has had this kind of background. So I have responsibilities when I play. I play with other people, nice people. Because it is, first and foremost, as we discussed earlier, important for me to be, as you said, gentle and kind and peaceful, non-violent, non-invasive, and considerate. It's something for me to deal with on the bandstand. Now, when I'm playing with masters, and I've been to the mountaintop, I play with the hardest swinging bassist and the hardest swinging drummer in the history of jazz, Ray Brown and Art Blakey. I am not on their level, but I've experienced what I can feel. And if I'm in a situation where I'm playing with one of just a very, very small handful of bassists and drummers in the world right now that are jazz masters, and completely understand and represent where the music comes from and what it's about, then I'm trying to learn how to like negotiate between being nice, which is first and foremost, be a nice guy in life on the bandstand, and yet to take responsibility if I'm around individuals that are not honoring precious elements of the music.
So what do you do?
I just try my best. Trial and error.
So are you saying that you rise your playing to a new level? But I mean, it seems to me the minute you sit down at the piano, you're at the level that you sit down and you're there. I'm not sure. Are you saying that you are playing differently in different situations?
It's an interesting question. So if I can put a rhetorical question back to you, we can explore it. Are you speaking differently in different situations?
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean?
That I'm responding to what...
Right, to the moment.
Right?
And
that's right.
The particular dynamic with the individual. Right.
That's right.
Same.
Yeah.
Very much so. Yes, so piano, as you know, is an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
So a well-equipped pianist, you know, could have such a palette or an expansive palette, you know, from which they could respond to whatever's happening. Now, I don't consider myself to have, you know, a particularly large musical vocabulary. And again, I appreciate you bring up these two elements that you've observed in me. I very much appreciate it because, again, I just want to be a nice guy. So when I play, I try my best with the vocabulary that I have. And, like, some things that I observe in others that I admire, is that all music entails transitions. And I just really admire people who can make their musical transitions gracefully.
Transitions from...
Any sort, that's the thing. There's this, every sort of transition, you name it. Note to note, chord to chord, mood to mood, yeah. Section to section, soloist to soloist, tune to tune, what have you. Just these transitions. I see masters making them gracefully. It's magic.
And then there are people who sort of, like pilots who hit the ground.
Well,
you know, right?
I can learn from them too.
Mm-hmm.
And I can also have the humility to see myself in them. To realize the only reason it even stings for me to watch is maybe I do a little of that, for example.
Yes, there's a saying, you know, if you spot it, you got it. Have you never heard that?
I heard that one, the southern one I heard, which you may have also heard, is only a hit dog barks. So, in other words, if you had a big bunch of dogs and you threw a brick into it,
that's
only one
right.
of that
only
hit would bark.
Yeah. That's right. That's great. I didn't hear that. Thank you.
Right. Like, right. The one person
the one
would take
got
issue
it.
With the right. subject matter.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And I know that one in myself.
Really?
Yeah. And I believe absolutely that the things that that you judge and that bother you, particularly in other people, are the things that you're in denial for yourself. And so you can, they're always teachers, these people, and you know, I'm not always as good about it as I'd like to be. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I forget and I think it's really the other person and there's something wrong with them. Mm. But I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure that what it is there's a part of me that is responding to that.
I totally hear you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I thought you might.
Yeah. I get it.
All right, so now I like to ask people, you know, I don't think I told you, I interview people who make their living or their life within art. Clearly, you do that. Your life, it seems to me, is about your music. Is that not accurate?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So I always ask, how did it happen? How did it capture you? Now you began to speak to that some. They, you know, right?
That was the initial spark.
Yeah, right.
The record, yeah.
Right, and then somebody gave you a piano, or they showed up one day.
My parents, we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up, but from being the age they were, from the generation that they grew up in, they grew up in a time when, in a healthy household, you had a piano
right.
in a parlor. So. We bought a used upright piano, so beautiful, and it's still there in my mom's house. And I really fell in love with the instrument.
And how old were you when you started putting your hands on it?
Six,
mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. I asked my parents for lessons. I was trying to write my own songs, and I was really into the piano. They chose to hold off just for a little bit because my sister had started taking piano lessons. We didn't have a lot of money, and me being so young, they just wanted to see if it was just a little fad.
Right.
But they saw after about a year that I was really serious about it, so they got me a teacher. And the first lesson, they were a turnoff for me because I just had total freedom before with the instrument.
Yes.
She was imposing these structures. And after a few lessons, actually, I could be exaggerating. Maybe it was more than a few lessons, but... Excuse me, eventually this teacher telephoned my parents and made the observation to them that each time I played the tunes, I would vary them a little bit, and she thought that I might have an inclination towards playing jazz.
Oh, what a wonderful thing to say.
Yeah.
Because she could have, I thought you were going to say that she thought of you as difficult or
right.
undisciplined.
That's right. Oh, my parents told me I thought,
right. Oh,
you know,
shit.
I was in trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Great
she
for her.
She saved me free.
Wow.
How about that?
Good for her.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. That's wonderful.
And so I didn't make the connection about the feeling of what jazz is and the blues and that it swings and with space and communication and telling a story and all these things and the full flavor and culture of the music. I just dug, being able to choose my own notes. And I see that a lot in some young people. Because these days, it hurts me a bit, or more than a bit, that the word jazz is used to mean almost anything employing a horn or improvisation. And like, almost any so-called singer-songwriter is hyped as being jazz-influenced or jazz-based. Right. Although name-drop Billie Holiday. Not so. And I find that offensive because I love the music. And it's like blasphemous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you think that not only jazz, but so much is getting homogenized?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And rather than just sit around or stand around and complain about it and shake our heads, we can be... responsible, strong warriors and do something about it. So I've been blessed to have the teachers and mentors in my life to support me and inspire me and help me. And I have a responsibility to them Do I really see this through? Me even playing music is an extension of my father's dream. He played the tenor saxophone, didn't learn to read music well, and he never was able to work full-time playing music.
Because he couldn't read?
I would say that was part of it, and he might have had a little something to prove, and that might not have served him too well.
Little chip?
Little chip, I think. He grew up in a Jewish black neighborhood in Pittsburgh.
Oh,
yeah. He always really wanted to be accepted by the black guys.
Black community,
you know?
Right.
And me too, you know?
Yeah.
But not with a chip on my shoulder. You know, I'm really grateful for all the people that have shown me true brotherhood. And many of them have been black, and they've treated me as family because of the music.
Yeah.
You know?
It's one of the things, it's interesting, it's one of the things that was so clear to me watching. That at its best, jazz musicians, more than classical musicians, are what democracy is.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care as long as you play the music.
Right.
You know, none of that other stuff, all that other stuff is extraneous.
The serious musicians, that's very much the case. And it's not for me to judge if a black man doesn't want to have white people in his jazz group. It's not for me to judge.
Or the other way around.
Okay. Well, I guess I have a little
I was going to say,
the white person
doesn't understand,
one, where the music came from, and two, the precedent that's been established by some white people taking this jazz, which has been created by black people, and having a high incidence of exclusively all white bands. Because of that, and my primary musical setting that I perform in is trio, piano, bass, and drums, by me being white.
Right.
And I have very much been targeted more than once in the media on the very rare occasion I happen to make a public appearance and both the bass player and drummer were white, that all my friends, Ray Brown, Christian McBride, my mother, everyone in my life knows that I have an issue about the band being integrated. It's very important to me. All my black musical friends say, it doesn't matter. Play with who you want to. And to them I say, in this racially charged world, it's easy for you to say that because you couldn't have anyone in the band you want and the band will still be integrated by your presence. But for me, if I happen to have just a bass player and a drummer that are white, then I got an all-white band on my hand, and people look at me before they see me, and for some reason, because I don't fit the description of a typical black jazz musician or a typical white jazz musician, for some reason, some people have seen fit to try to find fault with my presence in the music. And thankfully, I've had Ray Brown and Art Blakey and Oscar Peterson and Freddie Hubbard, among others, and Betty Carter, among others, let me know that I'm real. So no one can tell me otherwise.
Well, this is something I've not heard before. And it's so sad, really.
It is.
It's so sad. Because in this, I wanted to believe that in this area that wasn't.
My mother would say to me, as other friends have said, and John Clayton said to me, that the fault is in the person who listens to society. That I'm empowering it to take that stance. And I absolutely see their point.
No, I don't understand.
That for me to say, I'll have to have the band integrated because people will assume, if the bass player and drummer happen to be white in the moment, that I'm doing it on purpose.
And they say that there's something wrong with taking that stance?
No. Yes, they're saying that it would be my fault to listen to society.
Yes, that you shouldn't
right.
need to do that. That you should be
choosing
the players based on something else and not that.
And they have a point. I'm empowering that because I'm adjusting to it.
Boy, 6-1, though. I mean,
they're not the person that's taking the hits I've taken. And all I want to do in life
is play.
As you observe, I'm a nice person. I'm considerate to strangers. When no one's looking, I'm nice to people. I don't care if they're rich or famous or homeless. I'm nice to people, and I just want to play this beautiful, music, Native American art form. It's great music called jazz. I am an exponent of some masters that have chosen to take me under their wing and to record with me and to tour with me and to help me. And so I am very much valid. And if for the sake of the music, which I'm here to represent in this moment that I'm in life, if it'll give me a better chance to play and be heard, then unfortunately it's something I think about. Fortunately, I would not hire someone, whatever color they are, who couldn't play or couldn't swing. And if it was the choice between someone of one color that could swing and someone of another color that couldn't, I would go for the person who could swing. So it's not so much of an agenda, but it exists in response to what's happened in the past in the media.
You know, it's I don't want to stop you, but that.
Please do, actually. Really.
I interviewed Holly Hoffman,
mm-hmm.
and in an ironic way, she's saying the same thing, except she's talking about being a woman and what
mm-hmm.
that means,
mm-hmm.
and being having to face the. That's the one place it seems to me that the democracy thing really falls down, because so being a woman flute player, she had a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want to say flute isn't a jazz instrument and women shouldn't play it and they shouldn't, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same kind of thing, this idea, and it's interesting to me because I don't believe I've heard this before. This idea that the music is more than just the music, that you're being a role model, that you see yourself
mm-hmm.
as a trailblazer, that you have a responsibility.
Time out. I just want to say that you might have been talking about, one, but I don't see myself as a trailblazer. I just wanted to jump in on that one.
Why not?
What trail is my blazing?
I'm carrying a torch.
I'm
blazing the trail of being yourself.
Right on.
Of honoring your own beliefs.
Thank you.
But you understand, that is blazing a trail.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, maybe...
Well, in that sense, you could say anyone who's living their life is blazing a trail.
Anyone who's really living their life. I don't think that's that common. See, now you might disagree with me, but I think most people are trying to not stand out, not mm-hmm. be seen,
right.
not make any kind of statement.
Right.
And disappeared.
Right.
You know, you're not doing that, and not all musicians are doing what you're doing. Not all musicians
right.
feel what you feel.
Actually, thank you. I appreciate that observation, because I was spoken with a few of the young musicians here who I love, who are playing really well, and I said maybe it's a stage of life, because I see them not wanting to make any waves and keep their gig.
Right.
You know, scope out what the band leader wants, and like keep. And I know they have so much more to give, and yet I respect their position. Because, yeah, absolutely, they don't want to blow their gig.
Yeah.
And that's how you learn, is to give the band leader exactly what they want in each situation you go in. Always do so with humility and try your best. And, like, you turn around after years of doing that, and you have a voice.
Right.
So they're doing the right thing, and yet there's some people, I joke about it now, like I'm out in the open with it, like I have a dynamic personality,
mm-hmm.
and I'm put here this way, this is who I am.
That's right.
Yes, and some people, like you said, there's an honor to how they can fit in within the community and just be a part of the big picture, be subservient to it, and I think that's part of being a responsible musician, for sure. And yet, like, anyone that knows me and enjoys playing jazz with me knows that I might take some turns on you,
mm-hmm.
you know, which isn't what, it's not going to be every band leader's cup of tea. Probably wouldn't work for Tony Bennett.
No, right.
Yeah.
No. So, and I want to talk to this issue of that some people, because I'm more judgmental about this than you are. It's interesting. And I have to look at it. I think I believe that everybody has something, has a special take.
Right.
And that most people are not demonstrating their special take.
Right.
Instead,
they're not realizing it.
No, they may not even know what it is.
Exactly.
You know, they've learned very young to
tone it down.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. You know, cover it up. Yeah. Right. And really, the whole thrust of my show is that that it's better to be who you are, your unique self.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily easier.
It's the only way, though. I want to even, if I may,
yeah.
Just say, more than being better, it's the only way. Now, we know, you and I both know, it's not the only way that we experience in a lifetime, but I think ultimately we come to realize it's the only way to live and be and enjoy and, part of, like, anything near our dream of, like, a happy coexistence.
See, but I think you said eventually we'd come to that. I don't think that's accurate. I think most people don't come to that. And one of the reasons that
I believe in reincarnation.
Oh, that kind of eventually.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good.
In an eternal sense.
You're cool. All right,
it's
fine.
It's coming for all of us.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right. But in this particular incarnation.
Yeah, here and now.
Right, here and now.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people go through this one and they don't get it.
I agree.
Okay. And so one of the reasons that I interview artists is because when you listen to somebody like you, you hear it. You hear the deep connection. You are who you are. You're not trying to be somebody else. You're taking the lumps for who you are.
Right.
And you're enjoying the, Yiddish words are coming to mind. How bizarre is that? You're quelling on who you are. Do you understand that?
I don't know the word.
It means that you're enjoying it. That you're. It's bigger than enjoying. It's. I can't find another word. Sometimes I can't.
Really living.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You're really living it, right? And so it's worth the price that comes with the.
Absolutely. Well, listen, the heartache. Like, for example, you can appreciate musicians. We meet people in our travels who are enamored with the stage persona,
mm-hmm.
or the fact that we're receiving all this attention, what have you. And I think the ways that we get hurt help us as people, but it's evident in the music. It just like continues to deepen our emotional well, having been hurt, and then also with it comes sweeter appreciation, you know, for good people and the simple things.
If you don't let it shut you down.
Right. So all this helps us, and I see it's like part of my path as a musician, like learning, seeing who's real in my life, mm-hmm. you know, who's just conditional and temporary, and. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And then it all comes through, and if I associate a song, a melody, with something that really, really, really goes deep for me, I can touch the piano, play the notes of the melody, and people will feel what I feel, and they can relate it to whatever, like, experience they've had in their emotional fiber. But if it's real, if it's honest, it will resonate. That's why, to make an example, when we hear Ray Charles, you and I have lived nothing near his life. However, we feel like we've been there. We totally get it. Because
yes.
It's honest, it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, we can learn as musicians, like, from these examples from the masters, like, he's showing us that, you know. His virtuosity is like, it is realness.
Yes. Oh, that's so lovely. His virtuosity is in his realness. And that is a virtuosity anyone can have.
Yes.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
It's here. It's within
our You don't have to study that. Because it is you.
Well, here's something someone once said to me. Because, you know, some of us, like, we take on all these thoughts and influences from the family and society and what have you. A person said to me of this process that it's not a doing, it's an undoing.
Oh, lovely.
We're letting go of what is not. We don't have to take on or make ourselves this. We are perfect, as you said, innately. We just lose thinking that we're not or questioning who we are or what we're supposed to be or is it okay.
I love it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me.
And you know the expression, You're not a human doing. You're a human being.
Ooh, I don't know that. Oh!
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, because I'm like told that when I just did your
I know.
Just be. And then I think of breathing when you say that.
Yes, right, because that's all you have to be, right? Okay, I want to ask you a technical question. I've never seen anybody play the way you play or move your hands the way you move them. What is that? Or am I wrong about that?
I don't understand your question.
You do something with your hands on the piano that I have never seen. I'm just making that up.
I'm not sure. Honestly, I'm not playing games.
No, I know you're not. I would never accuse you of playing games.
But I don't understand what you mean.
Well, maybe I'm just wrong. It seemed to me that you moved your hands in a way that's unusual. I guess I'm wrong.
If you show me, I mean, we don't have this, but it's like you show me on a videotape what you're talking about, maybe I would understand what you're asking about.
Well, maybe it's just that you have a huge reach. Do you?
Normal.
Yeah, right. I don't know. I watched you, and I thought, wow, I've never seen anything quite like that, and maybe you learned it that way, or somebody taught it to you, or did they teach you how to hold your hands?
You're talking about like my hand position?
Yeah.
Like so it was sort of flat or claw-like?
Yes,
or something.
Uh-huh.
It's my own thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
that's
why I didn't understand the question.
Yeah, it's your own thing.
Yeah.
Right. I'm thinking no teacher actually taught you to do
they
that.
They wouldn't condone that.
No, that's what I'm thinking.
Right.
Right, oh good. I'm thinking, right. Wow.
That's why I don't appreciate when someone tags along with my name, classically trained. Why? Because I'm white and I play the piano? No, I'm not classically trained. What? Again, how blasphemous, what a disrespect to classical, someone who is classically trained in classical music. People say classically trained because I'm white and I play the piano.
Yeah.
There's nothing, I'm not, you know? Why else would they say that?
Yeah, I do.
Right.
I do.
So I've gone to classical coaches a few times because I love listening to classical music. And I love the classical piano repertoire. But it's not my calling. But I've tried a few different times over the years, and you know, people have seen my hand technique and stuff, and they have me play, and generally people say, well, you know,
do what you do.
Yeah.
right.
And it's the same, like I have a very unusual way of holding a pencil. It just works for me, and I've always done it. So.
Yes, and I want to make that point. You're a wonderful, wonderful pianist.
Thank you.
And you didn't have to do it the way everybody else did it. Do you understand?
I think so.
You know, I knew a writer once who is functionally illiterate.
Uh-huh.
He can't write full sentences,
right?
But he thought that he had great ideas for stories, for screenplays, actually. And he had this way of seeing the screenplay in his head.
Uh-huh.
So, but he couldn't write it down. So he dictated what he saw into a tape recorder.
Right.
And then he gave it to somebody who could type it.
Nice.
And he has a career as a screenwriter.
Wow.
Right.
Doing that.
Slave. Yeah.
It's pretty brilliant.
Right. It's that you don't have to do what everybody else has done.
How liberating, right?
Yes, if you can believe it. If you don't keep making yourself have to.
So, like the sweet people like you, the people in the audience do for the musicians, is like it's a personal journey for each individual musician, and when you genuinely feel something for the music, and you feel caused to like express that, that just goes so far, you know. Thank you.
Oh,
I gotta go.
I know you do.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So then, let me thank you.
Thank you, sister. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so there is Benny Green, who is, in my view, a poster child for The Lynn Show. Benny Green, who essentially taught himself to play, who fell in love with the music that sometimes people think he shouldn't be in, who plays what he hears the way he hears it, who believes that virtuosity is in realness, who believes that if he is real in what he's doing, that others will feel what he feels. And it is absolutely true. When you see and hear Benny play, you feel, you are impacted. It is very, very powerful. And not only that, but as I say in the beginning of this interview, you see that the other musicians respond to that they want to play with him. He's not in competition. he says in this interview that he learned that one of the things that's so important is that you defer to the person on the bandstand with the best time, and that may not be you. He's not about making a point, being somehow standing out. He's about being who he is, and who he is a musician. He's about the music. He's about being real. And as he says, that is not always an easy path. Others may not see the value in it. Others may be trying to compete, trying to say, this is my place, you can't be in it. But as he also says, and as I absolutely believe, it is worth the price. Being who you are, finding yourself, the virtuosity in your own realness. I can't say it enough, I can't say it often enough, but apparently I don't have to, as long as I can continue to play interviews with people like Benny Green, who demonstrate it, who inform it, who show it. I keep wanting to make this point over and over again. All right, okay, I know I have made it. I made it. I make it every week. And as always, I need to thank Josh Hackney, who is the IT person behind this show, who has taught me everything I know and continues to teach it to me because I keep forgetting it. Because one of the truths about me is that I am dyslexic, and I forget things, and so I cannot learn by reading because I don't take information in through my eyes, which is one of the reasons that I can be a psychotherapist on the phone, because I hear everything. So, speaking of that, if you are looking to be in therapy, and you either don't want to go to someone's office, or you can't find anyone where you live, I do it on the phone. Okay, I got a little distracted. I was telling you about Josh, and how much I depend on him. And how if you have need for someone who knows about IT, about computers, about recording, you too can depend on Josh Hackney. And he also walks me through things on the phone. So you may not live in Florida, but that doesn't mean you cannot benefit from Josh or me. So you can go up on my website, thelynshow.com, THELYNANE. SHOW, don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com, and click on email me, say I want Josh, or I want to talk to you about therapy. If you're interested in the podcasts and you want to download them, we now have a page on the website called How to Subscribe, and one of the things it tells you is that you can download my podcasts from iTunes. So I have had several people ask me if they could do that, and now you can. Also, if you Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn or MySpace and you like anything that you've heard, please mention it on one of those social media. Well, as always, I hope that you heard something that you could use today. Something that helped you, something that told you something you didn't know, something that interested you, something that you might want to hear again, because as always, I will be here next week, and as always, I hope you will be too. I'm going to go out on this show with another song from Benny Green's most recent CD called Source. At the beginning, I played Tempest Fugit, so you could hear his flying fingers. But now I'm going to play, he says in the notes to his CD that this is the only piece that he has used in this CD that was not written by an instrumentalist, but was written by a singer, and that singer is Mel Torme. And This song is called Born to be Blue, and I just love it. And also it shows the other side of Benny Green, the tender, the gentle. And you can feel what he feels and probably what Mel Torme was feeling when he wrote it. So we're going to go out on Born to be Blue.
see I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have got the